Hello, everybody, and welcome to another Spiritual Hollywood Hour. I am Kate Romero, your host of Spiritual Hollywood. And before I go any further, I want to say thank you, thank you, thank you to Don Newsome, Douglas Newsome, and Seth Hendrick over at BBS Radio, all of which without we would not have all this transformational material on the airwaves today. And we have with us tonight a very special guest. Her name is Margaret Doner. She is a leader and visionary who can tell us all about the archangels. And tonight's topic is communicating with your angelic guides. And to give you a little bit of background on Margaret, I'll just read to you a little bit about what is an angelic channel and how do angels help. These days, if you're interested, you can find many, many angelic channels and other types of mediums. Most of them tell you that everyone is capable of being an intuitive channel, and I agree. Just as everyone can play the piano, the more you practice, the better you'll be. So start talking to the angels. More importantly, start listening. Angels communicate best in silence and with subtle signs. Once you learn how your angels talk, you'll find it quite a wonderful addition to your life. The purpose of an angel is to align you with your higher self and your higher truth. They won't live for your life for you or tell you what to do. If they tell you what to do, they take away your free will, your lessons, and your very reason you have incarnated on Earth. The reason that you're here on Earth is to make choices, learn lessons, and become, hopefully, more open and spiritually aware in the physical body. The path toward enlightenment assists you to align your physical, emotional, and mental body with your spiritual body. An angel's job is to remind you what your highest self already knows. Your divine self knows that fear is an illusion. There is only love, and we are all one, and judgment of oneself and other people creates disharmony on the earth. And I'd like to give you Margaret's website, which is www.margaretdoner.com. Let me spell that for you because donor is pronounced donor and spelled differently. It's www.margaretdoner.com. And the call-in numbers, should you wish to give a call to Margaret and ask her some questions, are toll-free in the U.S. 877-876-5227. That number, again, in the U.S. only, is toll-free, 877-876-5227. And in Canada only, it's 888-815-9756. Again, that's 888-815-9756. And if you want to call direct for you folks up there in the wonderful Pleasantville, Paradise, Oroville area, it's 530-876-3222. So without further ado, I'd love to bring on Margaret Doner. Hello, Margaret. How are you this evening?
Hi, Kate. I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I'm really looking forward to this.
You bet. I thought it was time, and everything actually happens in the time of the universe instead of our time. you know, the best way to make God laugh is tell him your plans.
Right. I love that saying.
Yeah. So, why don't you give us a bit of background on yourself? I know you had a life-changing experience, and you had a dream that it was going to happen the night before it did. Why don't you tell our listeners about that?
Well, I had a car accident back in November of 1986. At the time, I was actually working as a faculty member at a university teaching theater and dance, and I was a professional dancer at the time. And I had a dream the night before my accident that I was going to have this car accident, and it was quite lucid, very closely aligned to what really happened. But in the dream, I woke up before it ended. In other words, the car went off the road, and there was no ending to the dream. So I didn't live, and I didn't die. And I had the feeling all day that it was sort of a choice or an exit point for me, and that I told two people that I saw that day, I said, I feel like I'm going to die, but I don't think I'm going to die. I think I have something to learn, and I'm strong enough to learn it. And so when the accident happened to me, the thing that was so difficult and profound in terms of changing me was the realization that I chose it. And particularly in those days, because, you know, in 1986, the spiritual community, as we know it today, was relatively small. And the only book that I knew of, really, to reach for was good old Shirley MacLaine's Out on a Limb. And
it
sort of saved my life, you know. It did a lot of us, I think, back in 86. I remember picking it up and going, oh, my God, I'm not crazy. This is my reality.
I actually put my arms around the television set when Out on a Limb was on the series and cried because I felt like somebody understood me.
I totally agree. I understand so much what you're saying. So I didn't have the support systems in place to process the experience I had had, but I knew intuitively that on some level I had chosen to be hit by that drunk driver, and I had chosen to live. And I knew I couldn't escape from that reality because of the fact that I had seen my destiny in a sense so clearly and realized that I had chosen to make the end of the dream or the end of the story one of crawling out of the car. I mean, it was a bad car. It wasn't just a, you know, rear end. It was like over 100 miles an hour drunk driver on the throughway kind of accident. So it was enough to shift me, and it changed my body so that I couldn't do my dance career, which I had done ever since I was a child. I was 4 years old. I started dancing. So it changed all that. And I didn't know for a while what direction I was supposed to go in, but I knew I was supposed to go in another direction. And I quit teaching it. I was teaching at Brown University. I quit it. And I moved to New York. And for a while, I thought maybe I could choreograph. Music videos were kind of big there, and I had done some of that. And I thought maybe I could do that. But I couldn't. I just couldn't dance. And I couldn't do an arabesque and all that kind of stuff because it was just too painful in my back, and I kept throwing my back out and so forth. So I realized I was supposed to be doing something else. And, you know, it sounds in retrospect, and I share this because I think there's so many people that go through sort of similar experiences, and when they hear of someone else's experience, it helps them. And I think one of the things that it's important for me to say is that I didn't know for a long time, from the time of the accident and leaving the job at Brown University to the time where I decided to enroll in massage school and change my life, there was a period of time in there of lostness, you know, where the new life hadn't kicked in and the old life was done. And that sort of feeling of knowing you're supposed to be going forward somewhere, you know that there's something waiting for you, but the time, like you had said, you know, it's the universal timing. The universal timing has not quite put it in place yet. And so those, for me, are the times that we go so profoundly on faith. And we just have to hold on to the knowledge somewhere that it's all going to be right. It's all going to be good if we allow it to be and we don't force things too much and we just allow them to unfold in their own time. And so to just share the second part of the story, is that my husband, the man I'm currently married to, I met in massage school. And 2 years before we met, he had wanted to enroll in massage school in New York City. And as he was entering the door of the massage school, his angel literally whispered very loudly to him, "It's not the right time." And he listened, and he walked out of the school and went back home. And, you know, all his friends were sort of like, "Wait a minute, you've been talking about nothing about, you know, just about going to massage school. How can you say, you know, you're not going?" And all he could say to them was, it's not the right time. I don't know why, but it's not." Again, on his part, an act of faith. And 2 years later, when it was the right time for both of us, we met in massage school, and he actually had seen me on the subway on the way to school, not knowing me, and had that intuitive flash that I was going to school and we were going to be friends, was actually what he said. And when he walked into the classroom there, he saw me there, he was like, "Oh my God," you know, and it was one of those moments. So the reason to share this story, I think, is to show or tell people that if they're in that period between the old having dissolved and prior to the new having formed, that we all understand it, and it's hard for everyone, but to have faith and to know that there is something better that's ahead, that the universe, as you said, is making, you know, right for the future.
Right, and I just had a flash of insight about something, and I'll just give you a quick reason why I had this flash. My husband and I just did get a teacup Yorkshire Terrier puppy, and soon after we got a tiny toy long-haired Chihuahua. Aww. And while we're in puppy school with these two gorgeous little critters, and nothing but just the love they give us is way bigger than their bodies by an enormous amount. And what I've learned is when they go from short-term memory to long-term memory of a command or something, you know, an obedience school that we want them to learn or know, they have amnesia during that downtime where they slip from short-term memory to long-term memory. And what I'm hearing as I connect the dots to connect what you're saying to that incident of learning about the puppies is I believe we all go through that as we are remembering our divinity and as we are remembering that we already know everything there is to know and we've just forgotten that we know it. And when that slips from short-term memory and becomes long-term memory, like now you're married to the man who saw you on the subway and knew you would be friends.
Right.
So there's that downtime where, yes, faith and patience with those puppies during their amnesia is like, it's like, well, you just did this perfectly yesterday. What happened? And you can see on the little puppy's face, I don't know. I know I knew this yesterday, but I just can't figure out how to do it today. So, you know, it's patience that we must have with ourselves.
Yeah.
And the insight and faith to know that this too shall pass. And honestly, I know a puppy is a puppy, but I'm telling you, when they go through this amnesia, they're more frustrated than we are.
Right.
So, you know, we all go through that, and you make a very valid point about these are times of faith, leaps of faith, to know that on the other side is something grander than you ever imagined.
Right. And I think that the way that sometimes we get ourselves, I don't know if in trouble is the right word, but you know what I'm saying, we get ourselves
challenges.
Frustrated or whatever, right, is because we believe and feel that we're always supposed to be doing something, you know, and there's this whole feeling of I have to do something, I have to do something, I have to do something. And one of the messages that often comes through me from the angelic realm to people is this beautiful understanding of this idea of surrender as something positive and not as what most humans consider it to be, something terrifying or something that makes them vulnerable. But the understanding of the notion of surrender as a very empowering state of being. And that, for many humans, is quite contrary to the way that they feel about the word surrender.
Oh, my gosh. Let me tell you, I can so relate to that because letting go is one of the hardest things, yet it is the thing to do when you least think you can do it.
And, you know, and I think both of us will agree that being human, it's not easy, and most of the information that we have been operating on or with or from has been what we call that dense sort of third dimensional reality, this idea that if I can touch it and if I can hold it and so forth, then it's real and it's there and it's something that makes me feel sure and safe and so forth. And doing the leap to becoming a more intuitive being, or what some people might call working with your guides or working with your angels or your higher self, is really about understanding that there is this whole world that you know, we were talking about in a sense, which is in that period of time where you're going on faith is really the period of time where you're learning to connect to a higher realm and to learn to let that part, either if you want to call it that part of you, because some people are just very comfortable calling it their own higher self, or if you're wanting to call it your angels or your guides, learning to listen to and connect to that aspect of reality, and that it is reality, and that when you are there, you suddenly have an overview of life that allows you to make wiser choices and to understand that, in fact, patience is perfect because you're learning and experiencing and feeling and allowing pieces to come into place that need to be there. And rather than feeling that somehow those periods of times of waiting are just that most people feel like, oh, I must be doing something wrong. Nothing good is happening to me here on this dense 3D earth, rather than valuing what might be happening on some higher plane of existence or reality or in higher consciousness, the creations that are going on there to make it, like we were saying, perfect in the future, you know?
Yes, and when you're connected to the unseen in the way that is actually your natural birthright and the way we're born,
right.
We're always connected to the unseen until society socializes it out of us.
Right.
And when you're connected to the unseen like that, you get the subtle messages from the angels, from Creator, from your higher self that will lead the way, like your husband knew it wasn't time for him to do the massage school because he wouldn't have really had the same experience with you had he come 2 years earlier.
Right.
So, you know, there are subtle signs, and I'm sure everybody listening can think of things where they'll have thought of a person they haven't talked to in years, and all of a sudden they'll get a card in the mail from them.
Right.
Or you name it, any number of things like that. Those are the subtle signs. Those are the synchronicities. And I have a Katieism that synchronicity is divinity showing off. And
I love that. That's beautiful.
And it's so true.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, so whenever I experience synchronicity, I get a little giggle. It's like...
Yeah.
Today I did a past life regression on myself as part of my meditation, and I went back to, and I know you're a very well-versed in past life regression, so you might relate to this a bit. I just led myself, and I went back to a time, 200 BC, I was a 14-year-old boy named Pfeiffer who was an apprentice to a blacksmith, and then I fast-forwarded to the time of my death so that I could do some forgiveness work.
Mm-hmm.
And when it was the time of my death, I had become the mayor of the town, and I was quite the crime fighter, so I had a lot of adversity around me, a lot of betrayal, and a lot of people who wanted to bring me down for standing my ground of what I felt was right for the greater good. And I, at that moment of my passing in that past life, allowed myself to let go of any unforgiveness and to forgive all betrayals, all abandonment, all persecution, and to let go completely as I passed into a new life. And then I allowed myself to experience another past life, which was in 1914, as a woman in her 40s named Mercedes in Madrid, Spain. And I was a seamstress who had been celibate and never married in that lifetime and just went about fighting crime in a way that was almost undetectable, but being just very strong and standing my ground of what was best for the highest good of all. And I got to see that in the time of my passing, as I fast-forwarded to the time of my death in that lifetime, that I was persecuted quite a bit and abandoned and abused and all of those things that need forgiveness. And there was just tons of it because of who I've been in my past lives. And that's somebody who wants to make a difference, wants to raise consciousness. You know, I would have been determined a heretic probably most of my lifetimes, and I'm sure I've been burned at the stake at least 365 times for my freedom of spiritual belief. And I know the power lies within us, and that's what I like to teach. So in that meditation session today, for about a half an hour, I was able to remove several layers, like 1,000 pounds, off my shoulders of a current day situation that's going on that has me not feeling compassion for a persecutor. And I want to feel compassion for the persecutor, because if I don't, then I'm not feeling compassion for myself, and I know it all starts with us. So what would you say to the listeners, or to me, Margaret, about finding enough compassion for myself that I can feel compassion for a persecutor?
Well, it's a beautiful, all the things that you've said are so beautiful. And first of all, I just want to say that I think it's important to bring out a part of what you shared, and that is, people have said to me, I studied with Roger Wolger, who I think is brilliant. He's the author of Other Lives, Other Selves, and he's Jungian in his background, and I love the archetypes and all that that he's able to bring into the work. But one of the things that I've learned in doing this work is people will say to me, about past lives and so forth. Why do I need to know? I don't want to know, or so forth. And the first thing I always say is that it's you, and you do know, and you're pretending not to know. So,
yes.
You know, to think that you don't know, why wouldn't you know you? You know, that's a silly thing to think that you don't know who you are. Of course, you have access to all that information. The question, of course, is whether or not you are willing to look at it. And what I think is so important is when you begin to look at it, you understand that, and we're going to just speak as past lives as a linear concept, because even though we know from the perspective of being, and you know, our angelic selves or the angels, that there is not the sense of linear time in the same way. When we're on the planet, it just makes it easier for everybody to say past lives or future lives, whatever. We understand what we're talking about. But the notion that those lives, those past lives, are still with you today is what is so important about what you've spoken about, and that the reason to access it, the reason to do the work that you did today, either on yourself or if you need to go to somebody who can help regress you or so forth, the reason to do it is exactly what you speak about, is to clear up where you're still holding old story, old karma, to find forgiveness, to find release, to heal the old wounds, and to move past them. And there is no really, in a lot of ways, other point. And there's no difference from the perspective of the soul of doing that in a past life than there is doing it in your earlier life today. So for the same reason that you would go and do forgiveness work on a mother or a father or a family member who harmed you in this life is exactly the same reason that you would need to do it for a past life, because those past life wounds are as much with you today, if they're not healed, as the present life wounds.
Oh, absolutely. And
yeah.
And I know that to be true. And I'm constantly looking within myself, because I'm a firm believer that until you go within, you're going to go without. And mm-hmm. And I really believe that also for anybody who's having a similar issue where you feel like you're being persecuted, because we each have our side of the story, and of course we think we're right. And, you know, for anyone who's thinking that you're being persecuted and you're angry about it and you are, you know, you feel like you're being attacked, and revenge sure does feel like a real good thing to do. You know, drinking poison so you both will die is not the answer. What I have been striving to do for myself today is to choose feeling better over feeling angry. And, oh my gosh, it's like passing through the eye of a needle. It's very difficult to do in physical form as a physical being, you know, in linear time. And, you know, it's when we get disconnected from source, or when we forget who we are, that you feel that heaviness of your humanity, which isn't taking the high road. It's where you're angry and you want to be resentful and you want to be revengeful and you want to say, you know, rawr, and growl at people. And, you know, that's part of the human condition. I believe the healing work is in catching yourself in the act and taking a YOU turn while you're going through it. And it's like I kept declaring to my husband all day, I am feeling like a grump. I am out of sorts. I know I'm feeling this. I know what it is. I can name it. And I'm working as hard as I can to have empathy enough for myself to choose feeling good over feeling angry. And, wow, it's just been really hard. And even after that past life regression work, even though I felt so much better,
right,
there's a lot more to do, and there's great wisdom in what I'm going through. It's here, and it's perfect to teach me something, and it's the lesson that I'm looking for. It's the wisdom that I want to keep, and it's the pain I want to let go of.
Yeah, and I think another thing that I just want to touch on that's so important to mention about what you're talking about is that, as you look around, and I don't mean you, but all of us begin to look around, one of the things that we're noticing is that this is called the time of great clearing, you know, the time of great clearing of all this old stuff, this old garbage. And one of the things that we're all seeming to see is on a global level, you know, all the stuff is coming to the surface, and on a personal level, all our old issues seem to be rising, whether they're this life or past life, and those are usually actually the same thing, whether we're aware of it or not. And all our relationship issues that are unresolved, or what some people might call, I feel comfortable calling, old karma, those kinds of things, as they come to the surface, we're seeing it more and more and more, and it seems like nobody is exempt. It's sort of interesting to watch it being almost a global and clearing. And what is wonderful about what you're talking about is when you have the tools, and say these relationships come up and they're very painful, and when you have the tools that you're talking about, which is you've learned to meditate, you've learned to go within, you've learned to take yourself on a regression so you can find the source of whatever this is karmically, and then you have the tools to learn how to forgive, how to listen to your higher self, your guides, your angels. All of those are things that you have in a tool bag, and they actually can serve you so well because you can pull these tools out and you can utilize them to move very, very far in your personal growth, in your spiritual growth, and ultimately just to feel better, which is really, in the end, what we really all want to do. We just don't want to feel so bad, you know? We want to feel good. And that's why I think when people ask things like, well, why should I know my past lives? Why should I do this work? Why should I talk to my angels? Why should I go to, you know, a spiritual retreat or learn to meditate or so forth? And the whole idea is really to present it in many ways as a practical gift that you're giving yourself to be less miserable and to learn how to be more at peace with the human race, to fulfill your life's plan, your soul's plan, and to move forward and to clear out. And I think my belief system is that this period of time, there are tools on this planet like there's never been before. And I know you see it too. It's just, if you want to do it, there are more possibilities and avenues for spiritual healing, spiritual growth, clearing karma, deepening your understanding, your wisdom, and taking leaps and bounds in terms of, you know, growth of the soul. And
Obama is one of our tools.
I'm sorry?
Obama is one of our tools.
And absolutely, because not even necessarily in a dualistic way, you know, that this is a good guy, this is a bad guy, but
no,
that, yeah, everybody is a mirror. It's like, but these people, particularly these huge figures that we elect, you know, like Bush, you know, but all these people who take this, like, giant global, you know, face for all of us, mm-hmm. are such interesting mirrors, yeah. for our own growth. And one of the things that's so interesting about that is when we think, sometimes we feel so discouraged and we think, boy, there hasn't, you know, are things really changing as much as we think they are or want them to? And we look back, certainly, even 10 years ago at how people, I feel anyway, 10 years ago, I could not have been so open about my work as an angelic channel as I am today. The support I have in my community, which is Hyde Park, New York. It's not a big, big town. It's not in New York City, but it's about 2 hours north of New York City, hour and a half, 2 hours north. And now, it was a relatively conservative town, and now it's amazing. People are coming to these channelings. They're asking for private sessions. They are curious about the work. They're open to it. They're not embarrassed to talk about it. I've never been chastised publicly, like, oh my gosh, you know, all those old stories that you're going to be. It's amazing. So I look at that. I know progress is being made, that people are open more. And when we look at someone like Obama, and you brought that idea up again, the mirror, we have a black face, a black family, which seems almost to some of us in some ways like, you know, it's about time, you know, but when we look back and realize that even 10 years ago we weren't ready for it, it's a mirror for us to realize, that we are changing and that we are moving ahead in some really beautiful ways in tolerance and openness and you know, understanding without judging and without maybe the barriers that we used to have.
Yeah, and so, also, too, you know, in reading about you, Margaret, I know that, you know, you bring up the point that Obama is an African-American person and has an African-American mm-hmm. family. Well, you know, dealing in past life therapy work,
yeah.
we know that the black skin has white skin underneath it. We know that mm-hmm. the Asian has Caucasian underneath it. We know that, and vice versa, we know
right.
that we
the
have
male
been
to female, the male to female, and the persecutor's
female.
The victim,
yeah,
right?
And you do these delicious yeah. writing classes that really help men get in touch with their feminine side, and women get in touch with their masculine side because we've been both.
Exactly.
And what you do is you help the writers access all parts of themselves throughout time, and
right.
you know, utilizing their Akashic records.
Right.
To help them understand who they are in this lifetime, to bring out the best that they can bring out in their writing. And the richness that comes from that is a tapestry that's just divine. So, you know, I think that's a really great way to lead people in your writing workshops, being that this is an entertainment radio show,
that's
higher
right.
consciousness radio show.
Right.
You know, I believe that the writers would really, really be excited to learn more about your approach in that regard to past life regression and writing. And I want to give your website again. It's www.margaretdonor.com. That's www.margaretdonor.com. And go there and take a look around. I think you'll be fascinated. Margaret has also written some screenplays herself and has many, many, many wonderful things going on in products that you'd be interested in, that I myself am enjoying, and many books that you've written as well. Would you tell our listeners some of the books you've written, Margaret?
Well, they do sort of run the gamut. I wrote a book called Lies and Lust in the Tudor Court, The Fifth Wife of Henry VIII, which I did, I wrote it as, and I also did the screenplay, actually, for that, The Fifth Queen, which it's actually a good, pretty good screenplay. I submitted that into Nicole years ago and did well in placing in the, I think it was the semifinals and that or something with that. So that was, I tried, it was my years, I'm not really doing that so much anymore, but in the, you know, in the years where I was doing more screenwriting and that kind of thing. But I got in touch with the character of Catherine Howard through work with Roger in past life regression work, and it's sort of what stimulated me to understand how juicy, you know, doing the, like you had spoken about past life regression work, how juicy it really is, and how many times unconsciously it's feeding so many of the writers, and they don't realize it. When they're writing their stories about the Old West, they're actually literally writing their stories about the Old West, you know, or at least some version of a past life. And that particularly when people become obsessed with a certain genre or a certain character historically, they can be pretty sure that they're working out or being drawn to it because of their own previous lifetime. So I decided that I was in a writing group when I was writing that book and the screenplay, and I just started offering past life regression sort of workshops for writers. And so they would come in and I would lead them on past life regressions, and they would use those images to begin to stimulate story and to uncover and to go places. And as you say, what would happen would be, oh my God, I can feel what it's like as a man, in fact, to give birth. You can actually, you know, access, even though you're in a male body, a life where as a female you gave birth. And as a writer, that's going to make your ability to describe and bring to life character so much more profound because you feel it in your body.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just thought it was a really, I didn't know of anyone else that was really doing past life journeys for writers. And so I decided to start offering that. So that's one aspect of it that came directly in a way from my wanting to do historical fiction after having access to life, with the Tudor court there. And then the other thing that I have found in my work, because I've always been very, my work has always been intensely personal because that's just how I like it to be and I like to be conscious of it. And so when I write fiction, I have a fiction book, Infinite Darkness, Infinite Light, which is about past lives, and the past lives in it are mine, and the present day story of it is sort of a fictionalized autobiography. And it really is about one woman's journey to try and understand what does it feel like? You know, we were talking about back in 86 when nobody, you know, what does it feel like to suddenly be somebody who's starting to get past life visions or feelings in relationship? How do you process it? How do you deal with it? And it's told through the idea of a relatively obsessive love affair. And oftentimes in our society, people will think that love, true love, is synonymous with this kind of passionate obsession. And what I found as a regression therapist and myself is those really strong karmic ties, those really obsessive karmic ties where you feel like you can't live without the other person, are generally, when you go back into past lives and so forth, I'm going to say are not real pretty stories. They're those are not the ones, you know, you think, oh, it's the perfect person for me. They're the one I just really need to be with. And you're like, you know, I have to obsessively, and you just can't imagine, you know, you'll do anything. Those stories are the ones that have the deepest need for healing.
Yeah.
Even though we have, you know, we've set it up in our society that somehow that's a romantic thing. When you go into it, you'll realize there's probably a lot of murder or betrayal or things
right.
that need to draw you together to heal with that other person.
When you feel when you feel those kind of sparks for a person, it's best to run the opposite direction.
Well, I know what you're saying, because generally it's going to be a tough ride.
Yeah, and then you got some more past life stuff in your future lives to deal with, and,
yeah.
you know, it's like if you feel so obsessed that you can't live without them and you can't live with them once you get them, that's not a healthy thing. So that's why I say when you feel that kind of obsession, run the other direction, take a deep breath, and ask yourself, you know, what the heck's going on. I know for me personally, the love of my life turned out to be what I call the Adam Sandler effect. He grew on me.
Yeah, exactly.
Now he's the most handsome, delightful, charming, intelligent, witty man that I've ever met.
Yes, exactly. And I think that it's important to sort of speak about that because I you know, it's very interesting. I have, you know, as you can imagine, a number of people that have come in. You know, the trouble with, you know, I was just going to say that people have come in wanting to know this, what this obsessive love affair is. But the problem generally, when someone's in the midst of it, they do not want to hear the bad stuff.
Oh, no.
They do not want to hear the bad stuff. So it's really, if somebody's there and they're not ready to really hear it, their best bet is to just, you know, because they just don't want to hear it. They get so angry. You know, that if in a channeling or if they go to a psychic or whatever and they tell them, you know, this may not be the best thing, they don't want to hear it. But the thing is, you can't, you know, you are brought together for a reason of healing. So I think if you can run away for a brief time, kind of, you know, as you were doing, do your little past life work, get clear on it, and then realize what you're there to heal, it can be a profoundly beautiful healing experience. Of course, given that the other person is willing to go along with that and understand it. I mean, it can, but it's not ever going to be, you know, what people think it is. It's just,
well,
you know,
you go about
Romeo
it,
and Juliet is pretty dark, you know?
Yeah, it is. And if you go about it consciously instead of unconsciously, you're way ahead of the game and your chances of getting to the beautiful part of the healing are much greater. And it's just best to be as conscious as you can about yourself. It's self-awareness really comes from your higher self, and as I said before, and I believe you said yourself, we are born knowing everything there is to know. How come we think we don't know us? We do know about us. We're just choosing not to look because we're not ready. And you know, free will is absolutely our supreme birthright, and anyone who comes and tells you, like you said, if an angel tells you what to do, then it's taking away your free will, and that wouldn't right. be coming through divine love. That would be coming through another right. dark source of right. some sort of the other. Right. But when it's really angelic voices, it is through divine love, and it does honor your free will, and it does just simply encourage you to have awareness about what's going on in your life and to trust your own instincts and your own intuition, and the answers are always within you, and the angelic guides lovingly bring you to the place where you can trust your own feelings. And that's what's so very valuable about what you do, Margaret, is you help people learn to trust themselves by getting validation about what they already know through your channelings. Does that sound accurate?
I think in great part that's absolutely true. And I did a private session today, and I have to say that I think, you know, the feeling it's the of the channelings that I do anyway is that they are ennobling but challenging, and both, you know, so it's almost like the angels they see the highest vision of who you are and what you can be and what you want to be, mm-hmm. and they remind you of it. So suddenly you're sitting. It's not even, a lot of times it's even just energetically, I think. I mean, because I feel it when you bring that energy through. Sometimes in the group channelings, people will say, you know, I came with all these questions, but then after we all together, we bring all our angels in and we sit there, it's kind of like, oh, it all feels, you know what I mean? It all feels so good. It didn't really matter now because I just feel at peace, you know? Mm-hmm. It's the energy that you feel. And then there's this sense of reminding, like you're talking about, reminding us that we are, you know, we are this greater thing, and we get into the higher self, and we realize that, oh, wait a minute, why am I letting, you know, this person, their opinion of me, be more important to me than my opinion of me, for example,
right.
you know? Right. And so suddenly you go, wait a minute, now, do they have, you know, in an argument, because you had brought that up and feeling, you know, disconcerted in another revelation with another person, and you think, well, now, did they have a point? And, okay, I see their point, but do I agree with it? And, you know, and if you don't, and, it, you know, if you feel that it's unjust, and yet you're feeling bad, then you have to always get to this point where you realize, wait a minute, I'm allowing somebody else's opinion of me to have more weight than my own opinion of me, and then you realize you've just given your power away,
totally.
You know, and that is, I think, a universal lesson and something we're all struggling with all the time, because there are plenty of people out there that just are happy to take your power away from you at any moment, you know?
You know what? I've gotten to the point, Margaret, where when somebody's trying to hand over their power to me, I hand it right back.
Right.
Yeah. I don't want it.
Exactly.
I'm spending my time dealing with my own power, and when, you know, there are people who don't know they do that. That's the way they do things. They come and they hand you over their power, and you're like, well, what am I going to do with this? I don't know.
Right.
I just give it away. Well, here, take it back. I don't want it.
Right.
So, you know, and I'm also a life coach, so when people do that, I enjoy watching their face light up when I let them know what they just done, and not to make them wrong for it, but
yeah.
they didn't know they were doing that.
Right.
So,
exactly.
You know, the only time someone can take your power away is when you give your permission.
Exactly.
For that.
Yeah.
And, you know, you need to be pretty darn alert to keep that from happening, because life comes at you fast and furious all the time. And, you know, when something happens, you're not expecting it, and you know, you've got to think on your feet. It's really, really a big job to mind the store, all the doors and windows, and, you know, who's coming in and who's going out, and how's it affecting you, and what do you do about it? That's the greatest thing to do for all concerned. I mean, I don't know if everybody else thinks that way, but I'm always looking for the win-win situation, and giving my power away is not a way to get there.
Right. And I think the other thing you touch on that's extremely important, and actually even does relate to something we've talked about with the angelic side of it, and that is the whole idea of personal responsibility. And, of course, it's so much easier to give that away, like you're saying, to give your power away and, you know, make somebody else take, you know, it's so much easier. Oh, good, if they make the decision for me, then I can blame them, you know,
right.
And I don't have to hold the responsibility for it. And I think that really, if there is, I like to put it this way in terms of talking about karma and so forth and these kinds of ideas, that, you know, for me, my feeling about karma is, it's kind of like God saying you have to pick up the toys you left in the room. You know, it's kind of cleaning up your room. You came in to your bedroom and you threw all the toys around all over the floor, and you can't just leave the room and expect mommy to come in and clean them all up. You know, it's personal responsibility, and so that's sort of what the idea of karma is. Okay, you left the toys. Now let's just pick them up and put them away where they belong, and not make, you know, expect, you know, Kate to come in and pick up your room.
Right, and if they don't pick them up, they could end up tripping over them and hurting themselves.
Over and over and over and over again for many, many, many thousands of years.
Metaphor in that is quite clear.
And then you get mad, and, you know, the other thing that you see, you know, is that then the people that have agreed to take on personal responsibility are willing to say, oh my gosh, I just tripped over that toy, you know, I did that, I didn't pick it up. And then there are always the people that we talk about, you know, with the victim mentality, that, you know, it's always somebody else's fault that toy was there.
Exactly.
You know, and I think ultimately that's all we're really all trying to do, is to get to a place of being empowered. And that doesn't mean power over others, as you well know, but being empowered and being connected with our higher self and being able to just connect with our, you know, angelic guides and our angelic self and our higher self, and integrate that into our human physical body, so that to the best of our ability, when we make decisions, we're making them, as you say, from a place of greater purity of, you know, we're clearer, we have less, you know, hidden agendas. We have looked at our own shadow, and that, I mean, is so hard for people to do. And a lot of people actually have asked me, what do you mean by shadow? When you talk about, you know, looking at your shadow, what does that really mean? And of course, it's the part of you that you keep hidden, you know, the idea that the parts of ourselves that we keep hidden. But somebody said to me something really interesting once, and it's always stuck with me. I just loved it, because I'd always thought of the shadow as being the dark parts of the self, the parts that where we've acted out of greed, or we've acted out of jealousy, or, you know, those kinds of things. But she said to me, you know, somebody who is, you know, who is engaging constantly in criminal behavior, for example, what society deems sort of a bad person or whatever, she said their shadow is their divine light. That's the part of themselves they keep hidden. And they're hiding that part from the world, but it's still there. They still have, that's the flip side of their coin. So the shadow is just the parts of the self, maybe, that's the other side of the coin, or the flip side, perhaps, of what you're actually generally expressing. But I usually think of it as being the parts of ourselves that we haven't owned up to, we haven't integrated, we haven't shined the light on, and that often it's those parts of ourselves that, really the interesting thing, as I'll say it this way, that the path to the light is always through the shadow, because if we ignore that part of ourselves and we just keep it, you know, hidden all the time, then we haven't given it an opportunity to heal. We haven't shined the light on it. And our job is really to go into those places and shine light and bring them up into light, you know, rather than keeping a lid on it. And that's why, actually, my book, Infinite Darkness, Infinite Light, I loved the idea of that, because at one point the character that is uncovering all these past lives discovers that she and this man that she has become sort of obsessed with, that they were together in Dachau in the concentration camps. And she says to him, it wasn't our moment of infinite darkness, it was actually our moment of infinite light. And what she means by that is that it was the darkest moment for their souls at that time in that life, but it was at that moment, because of its intense darkness, that they chose to find the light, that they chose to work their way up into the light. So it was, in a sense, they're hitting the idea that when you hit rock bottom, it gifts you finally with the desire to look upward and see the light and to begin the crawl upward into the light. So even those moments of infinite darkness can be looked at as being your moments of infinite light.
I know for myself, having been born spiritually wide awake to an atheist family, that I was pushed to enlightenment. And I also know that it's only when people turn away from the light that their shadow is seen.
Right, yeah.
And without darkness, you can't appreciate light, which would explain our past, present, and our current one. The darkness that we had before helped us appreciate the light we have now. And that's not to make anybody good, wrong, bad, or indifferent.
Right.
It's just the state of our consciousness during the time that we had the past president elected, state of the planet, of how our collective consciousness was thinking, was represented by that election and that second election. And then this election shows that we've all said, okay, I surrender, I've had enough of that, let's try something we haven't tried before, let's embrace the light.
Right.
And that's just my two cents on that topic.
And moving from fear, because I just to add one more thing, which I think is so interesting, which is I actually put in the book Infinite Darkness, Infinite Light, but when I was doing a lot of this past life work and doing a lot of clearing, and I discovered, you know, periods and pits of great darkness, I asked God at one point in, you know, a period of despairing, I said, you know, what is this fear, this intense fear? And such a beautiful metaphor was given to me. And it felt to me that it came directly from God. And basically what was said was that, do you remember when you've laid down on the grass in the sun, and you lift your hand and you use your hand to cover the entire sun, and your little hand can cover the entire sun. And it was said to me, your fear is like your hand. Your fear can block the entire, or make you believe that is blocking the entire light of God. That little fear is capable of blocking the entire light of God, just like your hand can block the sun. But if you stand back a little bit, you'll see it in its true proportion. You know, that your fear is to God's light the same as your hand to the sun, to the great sun, just a tiny little speck of nothing in comparison. But from the distance that you are, it can block the whole thing and put you into fear. And so I don't know if that's clear, but it made it very clear to me. It made me understand.
Very clear. It's
the
clear
illusion
that
of it.
That fear is an illusion. And, you know, I have a acronym that I made up about fear, F-E-A-R. I've changed it from false evidence appearing real to feeling excited and ready.
Oh, yeah,
and
great.
I do my best to remember that when I'm feeling fearful, because, you know, it's the human condition that we all go through it, and our challenge is to transmute that while we're going through it into something that can serve us.
Yeah.
So, you know, looking at fear as an illusion is a smart thing to do, and it's not the easiest thing in the world to do.
No.
And for anybody else who would like to discuss this further with Margaret Doner, go to her website at www.margaretdoner.com, MargaretDoner.com, and you'll find all the contact information there. And do yourself a favor and have a channeling with Margaret and a conversation with Margaret, and take a look at all the wonderful products she has to offer, and just start really enjoying the treat of discovering yourself through your angelic guides and through, you know, where your intuition leads you. And you might just find your next love, or your own true love, or your soulmate, or your next best friend or your best friend looking at you in the mirror. And, you know, really that's the best place to get to, is the relationship that you have with yourself really creates all of your reality. And to get that balanced and healthy would be the best thing. I think we have a caller.
Okay.
We have a caller? Yes, no?
The last
I don't think so. Okay, so we're coming up on the last 30 seconds of our Spiritual Hollywood Hour. I want to thank you, Margaret Doner, for joining us tonight and for all the good work that you're doing.
Thank you.
And thank you, listeners, for checking in with us this week and next week. And just remember, the last six letters of attraction are action. So, you know, pick up the phone and ask for help. Send an email. Ask for help. If you're struggling right now, trust yourself and do what's best for you. And if you've got one prayer that you can pray today, make it for yourself. Thanks for listening, everybody, and have a good night.
Thank you, Kate.